Brown versus Columbia Sussex, Mr. McCain.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Trent A. McCain, and I represent the appellants. Sitting at the appellant's table is Mr. James Piggy, the lead plaintiff in the district court case, and the appellant's representative today. This case is on appeal from a final judgment entered in this case on January 10, 2011, dismissing 52 plaintiffs from the underlying case.
Actually, you didn't take an appeal from that Rule 54B order or judgment, did you?
Good point, Your Honor. Judge Sykes, what happened is on November 10th, 2010, the judge entered an order granting the defendants dismissal of these several plaintiffs. And the plaintiffs subsequently filed a motion to have a judgment entered, and that judgment was indeed entered on January 10th, 2011. We filed our notice of appeal, our original notice of appeal, in December of 2010, and we rely on Federal Rule of Appellate Procedure 4A2 as a safe harbor for that, because the judge announced his order at the time of November 10th, 2010, but entered his dismissal as a final judgment in January of 2011.
Actually, that's not exactly right. The judge didn't just announce his order, but he entered it on November 10th.
Yes, that is correct.
The docket is clear about that. It's a non-final order, not appealable. And you took an appeal from that, and then later asked the court for the 54B judgment.
Yes.
And that was entered in January, but you didn't take an appeal from that. That's your final order that's appealable. The safe harbor provision of Rule 4A that you're relying on here doesn't apply in this situation.
Your Honor, our position is that the rule provides for premature notices of appeals if they don't prejudice the appellee, and that it's a reasonable mistake as opposed to a mistaken belief that the order is final. In the judge's final order, pursuant to 54B, he went through a thoughtful analysis of why that should have been considered, or why it is considered final and appealable.
I don't quarrel with that. The 54B judgment that was entered in January is certainly appropriate under the circumstances. It's just there was no appeal taken from that final judgment, which is what triggered the right of appeal.
Well, we ask that this court consider this appeal under Rule 4A2 as being the notice of appeal being the date of the entry of the final judgment as opposed to the November 10th date. That's what we're asking the court to consider under Rule 4A2. In order to warrant the severest sanction under Rule 37, the sanctioned party must have shown willfulness, bad faith, or fault. And it is our position, Your Honor, that the appellants did not show this. Originally, this case was brought in the name of Mr. Piggy, his organization, as well as 149 or so unidentified plaintiffs. Mr. Piggy takes a group of high school students each year on a tour of historically black colleges and universities, and it's a volunteer organization. Mr. Piggy has the help of volunteers, so the records aren't always as good as they could be. So when we brought this suit in 2008, we did not have clearly defined all of the participants in the 2006 trip. When we filed the second amended complaint, we erroneously added individuals that did not attend the 2006 trip but attended others that either preceded or succeeded the 2006 trip. And the defendants served discovery on the plaintiffs in about 267 plaintiffs at that time. And we were unable to respond to those requests on a timely basis. So we asked that they give us an extension, and they granted us that. And the only instance where the plaintiffs did not ask for an extension from the court was between March 29, 2010 and June 16, 2010. In June of 2010, the defendants filed a motion to compel, and the court ordered that the discovery be due by July 16 of 2010. And again, counsel was unable to do that. I think that this case is unique or different from some of the other cases where bad faith, willfulness, or avoidance has been shown because of the sheer number of plaintiffs involved. I have a one-man operation with one secretary, and in the other cases where the discovery sanctions have been upheld in this case, they usually involve one or two plaintiffs as opposed to hundreds, and a much better heeled firm than myself. If we look at the court's exploration of this, starting with Ball, of course, where due warning need not be repeated, but there should be an explicit warning in every case. Judge Posner talked about, in the Patterson case, there was a per curiam opinion that says where the district court has expressly warned that a further delay would lead to dismissal, the appellate courts have affirmed. And I mentioned Patterson first because the district court used it as an example to compare to the instant case. And the plaintiffs in the Patterson case were a father and minor son living in the same city. These 100 or so plaintiffs that we filed the case for, some live outside of the judicial district now or are attending school in that judicial district. So their numbers have changed. We've had difficulty locating them. And in that case, the plaintiffs missed four discovery deadlines and each time failed to ask for an extension of time. That has not been the case here. Counsel has asked for an extension of time on a timely basis, save for one, and that was the March 29, 2010 deadline that was missed. The district court repeatedly accommodated the plaintiffs in that case, but warned that the final time that dismissal would follow an additional failure to meet the deadline. There was no such warning in our case.
Mr. McCain, when the district court suggested in granting the extension to 2010, you know, August of 2010, and labeled it a final extension, and that another request wouldn't be looked upon with favor, is it your position that that's an inadequate final warning or explicit warning?
Your Honor, I don't think that that was could be considered an explicit warning. I think that the judge was very clear that any additional requests would be met with disfavor. He didn't say they wouldn't be granted. He didn't say that you're not going to have another opportunity. The judge, Judge Cherry at the time, said that it would be met with disfavor. So that leads counsel to believe that unless extraordinary cause was shown, that that would be request would be denied.
Met with disfavor is sort of a euphemistic way of saying no more, isn't it?
It certainly could be interpreted that way, Your Honor. It certainly could.
I want to save the rest of your time.
Yes, I would like to do that for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. McCain. And Mr. Bollinger?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Brett Bollinger on behalf of Columbia Sussex Corporation and Columbia Properties Baton Rouge Limited. Your Honor, there's a few points here today. First, the jurisdictional issue that Judge Sykes pointed out was actually raised by the clerk of the court when appellants first filed their brief, in that whether 4A gives the safe harbor or not. The way we interpret it is that if there is a decision that is announced by the court and a notice of appeal is filed before the judgment is actually entered, if the decision that was announced was a final judgment but just not entered yet, you get the safe harbor provision. That's not what actually happened in this case. In this case, they announced a non-final decision, they filed a notice of appeal, and then when they were told that wasn't a final decision, they asked for a final decision and then let this proceed from there. The procedure should have been, once they got the final decision in January 2010, to then move for a, to then file a new notice of appeal to bring this before the court.
They should have dismissed the first appeal. Is that what you're suggesting?
Your Honor, I don't believe I don't believe the first appeal was actually taken properly. I don't think they've got any safe harbor provision under 4A, as Judge Sykes pointed out.
The decision that was entered in November was actually entered. It wasn't merely announced on the bench or otherwise subject to an entry of a written order following that announcement. That's what the safe harbor contemplates.
Exactly. It was announced and entered by the court. They then took an appeal, and they were told that's not a final decision, so then they moved for a final judgment. Then the 54B was later entered. So you're right, Your Honor. It was actually entered. It wasn't an announcement pending an entry of judgment. But, Your Honor, moving to the merits of this case, I think you've seized on exactly what this is about. There's 224 plaintiffs that just refused or ignored or didn't want to participate in discovery in this case. They missed or ignored five deadlines over the course of 8 months. Several of those were granted by counsel, and I understand that, you know, they brought this. They had a lot of plaintiffs to deal with. We gave them extensions. And then after they kept missing extensions.
Did you depose all 224?
Absolutely, Your Honor. They have brought very serious charges that we do not believe have any merit against my client. And we absolutely, we probably will still depose the vast majority of them. Whoever had any connection with this, we still impose. There's still a portion of the case pending in the district court, and absolutely we intend to depose them. Your Honor, after we gave.
What portion is still pending?
There are some. Well, that's an interesting point. Mr. Piggy originally brought the case. He then amended to add up 266 additional plaintiffs. 42 of them actually provided the responses to discovery. So 42 plus Mr. Piggy remain in the district court. The remainder are all the defendants who did not provide any responses to discovery. And not only did they miss the deadlines that we provided them, they asked for extensions of time. We gave them extensions of time. The motion to compel came when they had asked for extensions and asked for extensions, and I sent letters and said, look, I really need to get these, and they just ignored it. They just didn't send any responses. So I finally said, you know what? We're going to have to file a motion to compel. The court said, okay, we're going to give you a deadline to respond. They ignored that. That deadline came and went without an extension. They didn't ask for an extension at that point. They didn't ask for the next extension until, at that point, they've ignored everything I've tried to do. They've ignored the district court. The only option I have is to move for sanctions.
Why wouldn't they just be dismissed for want of prosecution? Why cast it in terms of a sanction?
Well, the district court cast it in terms of a sanction, Your Honor, because we had moved. I was trying to get the discovery responses. When I filed the first motion for sanctions, I just wanted the responses. And what the court said at that point was, exactly as you pointed out, we're giving you one final chance. Any other request is going to be met with disfavor.
I mean, these people have abandoned the suit.
Your Honor, that actually goes to what I think is an even bigger point that came out later. I don't think these people even know the suit exists. And, Your Honor, that didn't come out until 10 months after discovery was propounded. At the hearing on this, the judge is trying to find out, all right, where are we at? How far? How long is it going to take? And he asked the plaintiff, what have you done to get these responses? And plaintiff's counsel admits, well, I haven't even communicated with the vast majority of them to even try to get the responses. So 10 months after discovery was propounded, almost 2.5 years after the case was initially filed, he says, I haven't even communicated with them to get the discovery, and I don't even know if they know I filed suit on their behalf. This isn't a class action where he filed suit for a few and it would have covered others. He filed suit in their name. Now we find out only after the appeal was taken and we pushed the issue, a bunch of them weren't even on this case. They weren't even on the trip that he claims that they were discriminated against on.
They're listed as named plaintiffs?
Yes, absolutely. All 267 are listed named plaintiffs. And I sent discovery specific one set with each person's name on it. I didn't send one broad group. It was two boxes of discovery to each individual plaintiff.
Representation without communication?
Absolutely.
With the client?
Absolutely. And it's clear in the court record from the district court. Your Honors, this court has in many cases found similar instances and affirmed the district court. I've listed them in my brief, but the Aura Light case is nearly identical, even though I think they go further in our case than what was happening in the Aura Light case. In Aura Lamp and Lighting, plaintiff failed to adequately respond to discovery. There was two agreed deadlines and one motion to compel. At this point, we've got three deadlines plus two court deadlines. In that case, just like in this case, plaintiff's attorney said he lacked manpower. He asked for leniency from the court. Just like in this case, the court gave him one final extension. The case was ultimately dismissed, and the Seventh Circuit said, we have upheld dismissals where violations were comparable or even less severe. I submit to you that in this case, missing five deadlines, two court-imposed deadlines over the span of 8 months, and then 10 months after discovery was propounded, saying, I haven't even tried to get in touch with them, haven't even communicated with them to get the responses, certainly is worse than what happened in Aura Lamp. And the quote from the court in the Aura Lamp case was, no court would find an abuse of discretion in these circumstances.
Mr. Bollinger, did you get any responses on the discovery request?
The only responses we got were the 42 responses. Mr. Piggy originally responded. That was a separate issue. We received 42 responses by the August 17th deadline. And those are the ones that are still pending in the district court. Of the ones that are on this appeal, we have received none. We have not received them before, after the deadline. I mean, we're actually a year now after all this happened, and we still have gotten nothing further. The plaintiff takes the position of using a quote from the Ball case of you have to give him a clear warning. The Seventh Circuit has actually said, both before and after the Ball case, a clear warning is not absolutely necessary. In the Patterson case, the quote from the court is, the district court is not required to fire a warning shot. After the Ball case, in the Johnson versus Kuminga case, the court said, warning a litigant is within the court's discretion. And even the court recognized that if we say you have to give this specific warning, we're giving everybody a free shot. They can ignore the deadlines and not have any fear of a penalty if we say you have to do this. More recently, in the Fisher versus Singular Wireless case, the court said that the appellate court said that the district court did not abuse its discretion by dismissing without giving a warning. And in that case, even discussed the Ball decision and said, in Ball, it didn't mean you must give a warning. It gave sort of a safe harbor that may give some protection, but it didn't mean you must give it. Well, I submit you don't have to give a warning. But as your honors pointed out, warning was given. What more could the district court have meant when it said, I'm giving one final extension? A final extension to what? Then have you asked for another extension? What more could the district court have meant by saying any other requests would be viewed with disfavor? Or what? Or we're going to give you another extension? I mean, clearly, it's in Rule 37. It's in the motions for sanctions. The court even said on the first time, before we get to the second motion for sanctions, in the findings, report, and recommendation, it lists out, here's all the options we have, including dismissal. We're not going to do that, but here's all of our options. They knew it was an option, and the court made it clear. Your Honor, the court, they ignored all of these deadlines. The court tried to give them lesser sanctions of attorney's fees, which they ignored. The court tried everything it could and couldn't do anything. Your Honor, in this case, it's just like the Aura Lamp case. There was justification for everything that was done, and I submit, just like in the Aura Lamp case, that no court could find an abuse of discretion under these circumstances. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Bollinger. Mr. McCain?
I wish to address a couple of issues brought up by counsel. Number one, we filed a motion to dismiss 171 appellants in this case in May, so now we're dealing with a number of 52. Counsel also mischaracterized plaintiff's actions. We did not ignore any court orders. We always file timely motions for extensions. We made
Had you notified all the plaintiffs of the filing of the suit?
Your Honor, all of the correct plaintiffs, yes. I take complete responsibility for listing those 171 that should not have been listed. Again, Mr. Pickey's organization is a volunteer organization, and record-keeping left a little bit to be desired.
How many of these plaintiffs do you have an attorney-client relationship with?
I have signed contracts from most of them, Your Honor. I would need to be able to count that, and I can provide that information in a post-argument memorandum to tell you the exact number.
So there are named plaintiffs that you purport to represent that you do not have an attorney-client relationship with?
I have communicated with them in bulk, Your Honor. We had a large gathering that involved all of the parents and children that were in attendance, but in terms of the exact number of signed contracts that we have, I cannot intelligently answer that question. Also, Your Honor, I must point out that in first-tier mortgage, the Supreme Court stated that Rule 4A2 recognizes, unlike a tardy notice of appeal, certain premature notices do not prejudice the appellee, and the technical defect of prematurity should not extinguish an otherwise proper appeal. And Rule 4A2 was intended to protect unskilled litigants who file a notice of appeal from a decision that he reasonably but mistakenly believes is a final judgment while failing to file a notice of appeal from the actual final judgment.
Okay, and thank you, Mr. Gain. We have to terminate the argument.
Thank you for your time.
So we thank both counsel, and the court will be in recess.